Welcome to PMA Takes on Tech, the podcast that explores the problems, solutions, people, and ideas that are shaping the future of the produce industry. I'm your host, Bonnie Estes, Vice President of Technology for the Produce Marketing Association, and I've spent years in the ag tech sector. So I can attest, it's hard to navigate this ever-changing world in developing and adopting new solutions to industry problems. Thanks for joining us and for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. My goal of the podcast is to outline a problem in the produce industry and then discuss several possible solutions that can be deployed today. This series of PMA Takes on Tech is powered by our sponsor, Sensatech. Sensatech's innovative supply chain solutions help customers retain quality, manage supply chain risks, and reduce costs associated with transporting food shipments around the world. Ensure that you have the visibility you need, when you need it, to increase efficiencies. Learn more about Sensatech's suite of real-time visibility solutions at sensatech.info/PMA. The series is also powered by Driscoll's. Driscoll's is the global market leader of fresh strawberries, blueberries, raspberries, and blackberries. With more than 100 years of farming heritage, Driscoll's is a pioneer of berry flavor, innovation, and the trusted consumer brand of only the finest berries. This episode was a personal journey for me. I'm really interested in how we use food to make and keep people healthy. And what do we know now at the human genetics, plant genetics, and food density level to make the best choices for ourselves personally? Today, I have three amazing guests who are brilliantly working on all pieces of this knowledge chain. What I found is that we are unfortunately not as far along as I thought. Doubtful that next year I will have an app that tells me, per my genetics, what specific piece of produce I would benefit most from. But we do have so much information at our fingertips to make better choices. Genetic testing companies can tell us what diseases we might be more susceptible to, and we know diet plays a big role in that. Pairwise, a breeding company is breeding for convenience and taste to have us eat more produce. Antique Origin can give us a better view of the nutritional intelligence of the food we grow, sell, and eat. Let's start with Dr. Sarah Lasky. Sarah is a data scientist in health product R&D at a genetic testing company. Sarah's bio says, "I am a data scientist on a small team focused on developing the next generation of a consumer health platform. We develop predictive models for human health that utilize genetics, lifestyle, and environment." How cool is that? Let's drop into the conversation with Sarah. So Sarah, what do you do and what's your background?
My background is that I have a PhD in bioengineering. And actually, for my PhD, I studied immunology and pharmacology of HIV.
Now, Sarah is a data scientist. I asked her, what did data scientists do?
Data scientists like me put that information together to make discoveries about health and wellness. And so some of these are published research discoveries. So we publish papers.
Sarah talks further about how she uses all this data.
And so that is the work that I do, is using genetic and non-genetic data to develop machine learning models of health and wellness, make discoveries about health and wellness, and then return them to our customers in the form of product features.
So in this episode of the podcast, what I'm trying to dig into is just thinking about personalized nutrition. And I realize that this is not something that we can do today. We don't have all the information throughout the chain. And so what I'm trying to think about is, what are all the different, you know, what do we know now? And what are all the different pieces that need to come together so that people can know personally to them, you know, what do I eat that's good for me? You know, me as who I am, not just, you know, a white woman at a certain age. It's just, you know, but me personally. So what can we know through testing and genetics about what people should eat or not eat on a personalized level to keep them healthy? What do we know now? And then talk about what you think what we'll get to in that area.
Yeah. This is a very big question. There are a lot of angles and a lot of details here. So there are some things we know now. I think what we know now is more subtle at times than people want it to be. I think people are really excited about the future and they want things to be possible that aren't possible yet.
But we do know some things. An example Sarah gives is a particular saturated fat and weight report.
And this reports on a specific genetic variant where if you have this variant, then having higher levels of saturated fat in your diet is actually linked to weighing more. Even if it's the same total amount of fat, like replacing saturated with unsaturated fat in your diet would be associated with losing weight for people with that genetic variant.
Oh, wow.
So we do know some things. But the effect of that is pretty small. You're not going to lose 20 pounds from that. You know, it's subtle. And it's something that is easier to measure on a population level than on an individual level. Mm. And I think a big part of that is because genetics is important, but it's not the whole story. So if you think about, let's say like a high school kid who runs cross country and, you know, eats 3,000 calories a day, versus a new mother who's breastfeeding, you know, and maybe in her late 20s, versus a senior citizen who has Crohn's disease and is overweight and pre-diabetic. I've just described three people who could all be the same person over the course of 50 years.
Ah, so they have genetics. They're just
identical genetics.
Different stages, yeah.
But you could imagine that these people have very different nutritional needs. And so genetics alone will never be enough to tell you everything you need to know about your nutritional needs, because there are all these other factors in your life that play a role.
Mm.
And I find this exciting because I'm a data person. And so the answer is like, oh, we just need more data. Let's learn more things. And then with all of the data, we can make all of the discoveries. So that's great. I love it.
It's job security for you, right?
It means I won't have to be worried about, you know, intellectually interesting work for the rest of my time. But it's challenging because nutritional data is notoriously challenging to measure. And this is true of the food itself. So this is what you're talking about earlier in the episode, where even for something that you would think is fairly well-defined, an apple, there's like dramatically different potential nutritional values for different apples. And then on top of that, just measuring as an individual, you know, a person trying to participate in a study, measuring nutritional intake is really challenging. Anybody who's ever tried to count calories can tell you it's like a total nightmare. Especially if you're trying to count calories for something that doesn't have like a nutritional label on it, you know, produce is particularly challenging. And so this is why I think that it's so hard, even forget personalized nutrition, on a population level, it's hard to know these days what's even healthy, what's healthy, what's not healthy. You know, is it that fat is good and sugar is bad, or sugar is bad and fat is good? And maybe some fats are, there's good fats and bad fats, or maybe, you know, some carbs or fiber is a good carb, but then added sugar is a bad carb. There's so much nuance and so much complexity. And it's incredibly challenging to study and actually tease these things apart, even at a population level, let alone for individuals. So yes. I guess that's the bad news.
That is the bad news.
The good news is that like, I think that digital technology is changing that, is that it opens doors to new kinds of studies that can solve some of the challenges that we're used to having.
So what could it look like? I mean, I guess I hadn't thought about it as far as thinking about, you know, personalized nutrition there's so many nuances, and there's, you know, what's going on with your genetics and what's going on in your environment, and then what's going on with your food, and, you know, the food all the way through the supply chain, which is a whole other incredibly variable situation where you don't even know what the nutrition value is through there. So what can you imagine, you know, if you look way in the future and someone does a test and gets some genetic information, what could be done with that? Like, what could that be put into some sort of database on you as a person, and then just help you? I mean, maybe it wouldn't tell you exactly pick up this apple and eat that apple, but, you know, it could, what could it possibly tell you that would help you as an individual? What are some of the things? And I know it's not going to be broad and tell you your whole diet, but what kinds of things can you imagine?
I guess what I envision is a test where you're measuring not just your genetics, but also different things. And so that allows you to tell more things, but maybe I'm not being futuristic thinking enough. So what I can think of that I can definitely see a clear line of sight to, like, now, is an experience where you measure your genetics, you fill in some information about your current health status, but then you also try different things. You consume different foods, and as you're consuming them, you measure how your body is responding in real time. And so I think one of the really exciting things that is going to be possible in a way that it never has been before, with the fact that everybody's carrying around, you know, a computer that's constantly connected to the world in their pocket, is they call this an N of one study. So it's a study, and the sample size is one person. You're doing a study on yourself to figure out, how do I personally react? How does my body react to the choices I'm making? And I think that to me is the clearest line of sight to truly personalized insights, is measuring them yourself on yourself and understanding what's the best thing for me today. And maybe that's something that changes over time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because you are an N of one. And if you're testing yourself, and I think we all do that already, you know, it's like, I went on this run and I hadn't eaten and that felt really bad, you know, so maybe I should eat before I go for a run, you know? And so we're kind of all, those of us that are, you know, paying attention to what's going on. But I think that, so the genetic component of it is going to be one component. And I think especially around disease, right? Like, if you know that you have a higher chance of having susceptibility to certain disease, then that will have some effect on what you do as well. But it's probably going to be a while before something pops up on our phone and says, that apple doesn't fit with your genetics.
Yeah, or I want to have a snack. Should I eat an apple or a banana? Which one's healthier?
Exactly.
But I think that's where genetics comes in, is in guiding what are the choices that you should try? You know, what do we recommend? What do we think is likely to work for you? Or alternatively, what are the things that you personally might want to be optimizing for? You know, based on your genetics, you're at a particularly high predisposition for diabetes. So when you're looking at nutritional choices, you should be looking at nutrition specifically with the lens of what's going to optimize, you know, my likelihood of developing diabetes, for example.
And then I think even things, you know, like life changes, like pregnancy, you know, like you would have more information about what you need when your body is going through that sort of thing. And so that would be really helpful. And then I think the other pieces on the other people I've talked to on the podcast about, you know, how do you breed to get the highest nutritional density so that that's an opportunity that people can have. And then on the testing, the nutrient density testing, you kind of just know more what you're getting. So, you know, I'm in my own head just trying to put together, like, what would the pieces look like so that I know personally exactly what I should be eating right now. But that may not be possible anytime in the near future. So
we'll get there.
Yeah, I think so. All right, Sarah. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your time and just thinking out of the box on this, because I know a lot of people have questions about how we're going to get there. And certainly genetic testing and understanding your own body is helpful piece of information, and lots of data and lots more work for you to do.
That's music to my ears. That's what I want to hear.
Next, we have Haven Baker, co-founder, chief business officer at Pairwise. Pairwise is focused on exploring ways to use gene editing and leveraging the natural diversity in crops to address global food challenges, from row crops to specialty crops. As you will hear, Pairwise is working on making food taste better and be more convenient so we eat more healthy food. I was hoping Haven would tell me they had breeding for nutritional value all figured out, but as we will hear, that's really complicated. So tell us about Pairwise.
Pairwise, we founded in 2017, and the mission of our company is to lower the barriers to eating fruits and vegetables specifically. We use a technology called CRISPR technology. It's been used widely in healthcare to work on genetic diseases and provide cures for diseases we haven't had medicine. But when we think about the uses in food and agriculture, it's about taking advantage of the genetic variations that nature's already produced and bringing them into the fruits and vegetables that we love to try to get better results.
Great. So what barriers keep consumers from choosing healthy, fresh foods, do you think?
Well, this is a good time to maybe tell a quick story about my daughter. And I think we all perceive this. We experience it the same, but maybe perceive it differently. So in our family, my kids have to make their own lunch. And back when they used to go to school, they'd make a sandwich and then, you know, there'd be a place for snacks. And so in one of those little containers, she could put crackers or cookies, and then the other had to be a fruit or vegetable. And, you know, so you go to the pantry, and there are nine kinds of crackers and cookies that go in there, right? And that little compartment would be completely full. And then when you look at the fruits and vegetables you can take with you, well, the apples get brown, the berries smash, a cutie can go in there, gets a little tired of them, seedless grapes, you know, once you pick them off the vine. And what ended up happening is I'd see baby carrots maybe most days, and they would go to school and they'd come home from school because they weren't getting eaten. And so this idea that we make a lot of our decisions based on convenience. Taste is important. Shelf life's important. Those are barriers. But we think one of the big barriers is making fruits and vegetables as convenient as some of the other foods we eat regularly. And that's one of the barriers we're focused on. More nutrition, but specifically better convenience.
Great. Unless you eat it, it can't be good for you, right? Because it never gets in you. So you got to start there.
That's right. That's right.
So you talked about using gene editing and CRISPR as your technology that you're working on in breeding. And how might that technology impact consumer options for personalized nutrition?
Yeah, when we step back and we look at the problems across produce, and again, something we can all relate to is that what we buy today, we might have a good experience, but we go next week and we might have a bad experience. And then we don't buy it. Maybe we wait 2-3 months to buy that again. Now, a couple of the items are pretty consistent. You know, the box salad industry and the apples, they're pretty consistent day in, day out. But most of the rest of produce either has a consistency or a shelf life issue, and the flavor's not the same. So I think the technology will enable the focus on specific nutritional profiles eventually. But where we are at today is trying to get the consistency in the produce just so we can get that fresh, healthy food and have it be consistent for us every time we buy it, every time we consume it.
Yeah, that's really true. I mean, it's true for me personally, especially around like stone fruits and some of the summer fruits. The consistency really has a big impact. So how does breeding interact with farming practices? Meaning that you're working on getting the genetics right. But if you come in with this, you know, amazing potential, you know, amazing seed with this amazing potential, what impact is how things are grown? Don't they have to grow it a certain way to keep that nutrition or to keep, you know, those certain traits intact?
Sure. So, you know, it is a complicated supply chain, right? When it starts out with genetics and those are embodied in varieties that are either seed or plantlets the farmers plant. Then the farmers plant them and they harvest them sometimes at different times. And then sometimes they get stored, you know, some maybe a day if it's berries, and maybe 9 months if it's an apple. And then it's shipped 2,000, 3,000, sometimes 4,000 miles to those finished markets on the East Coast. And so the varieties we have today are optimized for the whole chain, but specifically the first part of the chain, more that farmers and maybe storage, because if the farmer's not successful, we're not going to have that variety. And so what when you create a new variety, it's almost like starting over every time from scratch. You're taking your known variety that you might like, that might be successful, and then they're crossing it with something else, and you have all these progeny, and you have to test it and test it and test it to make sure it's right. And so we, you know, cherries, we're working on cherries. A new cherry variety, yes, from start to finish, it's about 25 years. And so you have this really long development cycle. And so what we're doing with CRISPR technology is we can take an existing successful variety and we can add single genetic changes that don't change anything else except what you want to change. And so, again, the example of cherries is we look at one of the things that's helped drive grape consumption is seedless grapes. I mean, I don't think my kids have had grapes with seeds or barely had them. And so this is transformational in our lifetime that we've gone from a seed grape industry to a much larger industry that doesn't have seeds. And we think the same thing can be done with cherries and a number of these other fruits. And again, you know, it's about convenience. It's about, and also the choking hazard. And so we would use CRISPR technology to get rid of the pit on an existing successful variety. And so you don't take some of those risks you might've had with plant breeding. Breeding is really important. It's taking advantage of, you know, what nature has, but it is slow. And so we're just accelerating that.
That's great to hear. I actually did my graduate work on cherries here in the Central Valley in California.
Really?
So I spent a lot of time in those cherry orchards. I was looking at a couple of different disease interactions, but cherries have a special place in my heart. So that's great that you're working on that.
But we should talk about that offline. I didn't know that sometime. You know, one of the problems in California cherries specifically is they hit the market earlier, but they're not as sweet. And so that is a genetic variation. And that is something we also think could eventually be addressed.
Yeah. And it's tough with crops like that because they stay in the ground for so long. It's not like, you know, you get to plant a new variety every year. So it really is a long cycle to be able to change those out. So what other products are you working on in addition to cherries?
Well, the cherries, just to be completely candid, is a long-term project. It'll take us about 5 years to create a pitless cherry. And I think we're getting close to the halfway point. And then it's another 5 or 6 years to get the orchards planted, just to get them, to bring it to market. So, you know, that's the longer term, but we do eventually see that sort of application across all of stone fruits, which you mentioned earlier, the peaches, plums, and nectarines. But on the shorter term, we're working on berries, following on that pitless cherry concept. The seeds in blackberries and also in raspberries are a barrier for many consumers. They get in their teeth or they bother them. Also the consistency. And so we're working on both a seedless blackberry and raspberry, as well as one that has a more consistent flavor profile across the year. So we expect to launch those products in about 2024 is when they'll start getting to market. Of course, they'll expand to them. And then even shorter term, moving more closely, is we're working on new salad greens that have much higher nutrition profiles. So and lowering the barriers to bring those to market.
Oh, great. Oh, that's really interesting. You know, in this particular episode, we're talking about, you know, nutrition. And so how long do you think it'll be before you get those to market, more nutrient dense and different profiles?
So we're planning launches in Q3 of 2022. So right around the corner, you know, it'll have to grow from there. I think maybe a little bit more explanation, stepping back, that the salad categories, at least 10 billion, and it's the biggest part of produce. But, you know, a third of it's iceberg and a third of it's romaine. And those of us that care about nutrition know that, you know, that you're better off eating kale, but most people don't like kale. Unless it has unless it's massaged, has a lot of oil, lots of other things. And so we're working on greens that, you know, have the nutrition of a kale, but eat more like a romaine. And we think that's a key opportunity for those nutritionally conscious consumers. I think the other thing is, I'm sure, Vonnie, you're a big salad eater, but there are a lot of options. But what we find is our market research says half the salad lovers are bored with the options and would love more options. So
in the types of greens, you mean, or just salad?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it said best, I've got a you know, a friend that was visiting us from Seattle, and she said, look, I know I should eat healthy, so we're not buying romaine and iceberg, but my kids won't eat arugula, they won't eat kale, and so the only thing we end up buying is spinach. So if you're looking for that, you know, healthy but tastes good category, that actually gets pretty slim.
That's fabulous. And so what's your business model with those? Once you have the varieties developed, how are you planning on getting them to market?
You know, we're with one of the things that we think about, you know, and this is appropriate for this time is, you know, going into the Super Bowl, look at those commercials, you know, and how many of them are for things that we shouldn't eat as much of, and how many of them are things that we should eat more of. And well, there might be an avocado commercial, but there won't be anything other fresh produce commercials.
They want it to be fried, right?
Right. Some sort of heavily processed food that, you know, it's fun to have, but shouldn't be part of a major part of our diet. And so when we're enabling a business model, we can have more marketing spend. And we think that's important for capturing consumers' attention. I mean, the brands we love, Starbucks, Frito-Lay, they've got new things every quarter. But when you go into your produce aisle, you know, what's new there? And you might get a new apple variety every couple of years, but there's not a lot of new and fresh. And so we think a branded approach is pretty appropriate. And we're looking to partner with the existing partners to roll out this brand and bring out new products. But we want to enable it where there's a margin structure that enables advertising. I think that's really important. I think that's one of the things that if you look at Cuties and Halos, that they did really well.
Yeah, definitely.
Those are good businesses. They're good for consumers. They've been good for the retailers and farmers too. So that's the kind of success we're looking to emulate.
And that has that convenience piece that you're talking about as well.
Yep, exactly.
So when we look at thinking about personalized nutrition and knowing that it's in the future and we've got, you know, ways to go, what other pieces do you think need to be in place for consumers to be able to make decisions kind of based on information about what's best for them?
So there's a wide, our view is maybe a little narrow on this. There's a wide variety of healthy fruits and vegetables. And if we could just get them consistent, then consumers could make better choices or easier choices for what fits them specifically. But I don't think most consumers know which fruits and vegetables they should be having specifically. Should they be having ones with high antioxidants? Should they be having ones with more fiber? And so we've got to, you know, as we step back, the broader question, how do we connect the trends of what we need to eat with the foods that have them? And I think that's, you know, again, back to marketing, that's one of the things the produce industry could do quite a bit better.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm in a position to help with that. Greg Shoemaker is co-founder at Teak Origin. Teak Origin is building the world's first nutritional intelligence platform by accurately measuring nutrition in the foods we grow, sell, and eat. We will hear about what Greg is working on to allow people in the food supply chain to understand the nutritional value of what they are getting. We just touched on the surface of what Teak Origin is doing, so I would suggest you go to their website to see more. Here's Greg. So tell me what Teak Origin does.
Well, so maybe just 10 seconds before what it does, is why we're doing it. And so today, despite all of our scientific and technological advances as humans, it's impossible to know just how nutritious the foods are that we grow, sell, and eat, which seems just criminal. It seems insane that with all the things that we understand about all the different products in our lives, food is sort of the least known of them. So at Teak Origin, essentially what we've invented is something that we call nutritional intelligence. And it's really just accurately and practically, it's an important combination, we measure the key nutrients in fresh foods anywhere in the food system. And we do it in a matter of just a few seconds. We don't destroy the food. And the person that's doing the measurement or the analyzing of the food doesn't need to have a scientific or a technical background. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
So who are your customers now and who will they be in the future?
So right now we're really focused on large retailers, primarily in the US and in the UK. And it's for a number of reasons. One is we just happened to come out of retail. So it was where a lot of our relationships were and years ago. So we invented this original concept about 7+ years ago now while we were working at Tesco in the in Hong Kong. And so, you know, it had its roots in retail. But the other main reason why we're really focused on retailers right now is because we need to collect a massive amount of data. So there, you know, as I sort of mentioned in the setup, there just isn't good information around fresh foods. It's static, it's decades old, it's irrelevant. You know, the nutrition label for an apple doesn't represent, you know, the millions of apples that are moving through the food system on a daily basis. And so we thought by starting with retailers, that was a great place to collect a lot of data on a lot of different types of foods from a lot of different parts of the world. And then one last thing is that as we build solutions and we gain insights, retailers have the greatest ability to sort of push those back through the supply chain, as well as bring those solutions to, you know, many more consumers than we ever could as a startup. So starting with retail.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating in reading your story that makes so much sense because one, retailers are gathering so much data about what's going on. So they have the ability and kind of the mindset to do that. So I think that's a really interesting place to start in this whole chain of what are people eating. And the other thing I found fascinating is, as you mentioned about somebody tested an old apple, you know, probably 50 years ago and said, okay, this is the nutritional value in this apple. And it really has nothing to do with the apple that you buy at the store that has gone through that, you know, is a certain variety, has been grown a certain way and has gone through the supply chain in a certain way, you know, and all that variability it's just not in our thinking right now, right?
Not at all. So red apples are a great example. The USDA tested, you know, I think it was 3 red apples from a single farm, from a single harvest in, you know, 20 years ago. And that is the basis for red apple nutrition labels. So you think, well, no big deal, who uses the label? But that information is in every retailer website, every, you know, product ingredients that uses apples, Google search, MyFitnessPal, Apple Health app, you know, all these things. So it's underlying our entire understanding of apples. And yet it was 3 apples 20 years ago from Maryland, and nobody eats apples from Maryland. No offense to Maryland, but it's just, you know, it's not the market. And so, yeah, it's just, there's no way we can make accurate decisions based on that type of data.
So how far away do you think we are from consumers having the nutritional information as they shop? Like what's in the food? Should I eat it? Does it fit my overall health and nutrition plan to avoid disease? And does it support the life that I'm trying to lead?
Well, I think we're there today to some degree. So what we've sort of identified as 3 buckets of value, if you will, in terms of the insights from inside of our foods. The first one that we needed to establish was just benchmarking. We just wanted to be able to collect enough data to say, look, here's what we think is inside of that apple, based on nutrition labels or maybe based on a retailer standard or an industry standard or whatever. Here's what's actually inside of these apples. So basically, am I getting what I'm paying for, whether I'm, you know, someone in the supply chain or a retailer or a consumer? So we had to kind of get to that phase first to really understand just how far off are we and how dynamic is nutrition. The next phase that we've now entered into is what we call relevance. And that is, okay, now I want to have a much more nuanced view of this. So, hey, which apple is the best for baking a pie? Or which one should I put in my child's lunch because it's packed full of nutrition? Or which one's the best overall value? Or, hey, which one is, you know, riper or maybe tastes a little bit sweeter? And so I think those questions we can answer today, and you're going to start to see a lot of retailers use this information in their online communications as well as in-store communications to help, you know, make that shopping trip much more relevant to their customers. The final bucket, if you will, or sort of the final pillar of all this is what about me? So what's the right apple that I should be eating and what's it going to do to me in the short term and the long term? I think we're still a ways off from that because we just don't have enough, you know, information. I don't think it's 10 years, but it's probably, you know, 2 or 3 years before we start to see any, you know, capabilities like that in the world.
Yeah. And that's what we're talking about on this episode of the podcast with the other guests as well is I think we all kind of want to get to this. What does this mean to me? How does this support me? And I think your piece of it the other, you know, there's lots of pieces to putting that chain together of this personalized nutrition. And your piece of it is really important because if you can't measure what's there and you don't know what's there, then knowing your genetic makeup or having the right food, it, you know, you're missing that piece. And it's, I love the term that you use, the nutritional intelligence. I think that's such a great way to talk about it. So I think it sounds like the technology that you're developing is, as we move along, going to get us closer. How do you see it getting into consumers' hands where they'll be able to make that decision for themselves and kind of put all those pieces of the puzzle together?
Well, we hope if, you know, we're successful, it won't be directly from us. It'll be through, you know, all the different ways we access that information today. The information will just be much more relevant and dynamic. So, you know, I envision down the road dynamic food labels, you know, and hey, maybe it's something that is in a retailer's app or some store communication, or maybe it's your favorite health app or whatever. But I think that, you know, we have to sort of meet people where they're already at. I don't want to create the Teak Origin app that you have to download to understand what you're actually eating. So this information should just be feeding all the different things that are out there, whether it's Google search or a retail website or, you know, applications, health platforms, food and agriculture technologies. So I just feel like, you know, this information will be ubiquitous and it'll be involved or integrated into lots of different technologies. And we're starting to see that to a very, very small degree now, but that's giving us hope that that is the right path that we're on. I think it's really important, the bookends, if you will, in terms of, hey, what is this going to do to my personal health, and also how do we produce more nutritious foods, or, you know, how do we produce better foods? I think those are, you know, connecting those dots are critical, because what we've realized in gathering all this information over the last few years is that, like people, there are no two apples that are alike. You know, whether they come from the same tree or the same farm, or, hey, you know, the apples that are picked this year from an orchard are completely different than the apples picked from the same orchard last year. And so I think it's really important to have that understanding and the ability to, you know, roll with it as things change, as, you know, climates change, and as we ship things differently, or we go direct to consumer and the supply chain sort of is becoming altered. We just need the ability to go with that and be much more dynamic than we are today.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. What do you think is the biggest reason this is so hard to do, and why isn't it being done today?
Well, I think it's that point we kind of just touched on, is it's so dynamic and it's so different. It's like saying, well, you know, tell me who the average man or woman is. It's impossible, because there's too many layers and too many, you know, complexities, and food is no different. Hey, maybe this apple got a little bit, you know, more sun, or it was a wetter summer, or, you know, the soil conditions are different, or it was shipped differently, or whatever. And so it's really, really hard. And we've dealt, because food is so important, and hey, the most important thing is getting it to people so that we can eat and survive. And so that's been the priority. It hasn't been to understand it to a lower level. So the bookends are there again. If you want to truly understand nutrition, then you send a food off to a lab. And by doing so, hey, we can understand every single aspect of that individual food. So I think we have a really good grasp on, you know, what different nutrients do to our bodies. And then I think the other end of the spectrum is, hey, we walk into the store today, we're all consumers, even if we work in the industry, and we knock on the melons and we sniff things and we, you know, look at the berries and, you know,
like we know what we're doing, right?
Well, exactly. But we have to do that, because I mean, that's one, is how we've been doing it for, you know, ever. And two, it's the only mechanism we have. So I think what we're trying to do is kind of come up with something in the middle that satisfies that. We're not going to try to say, hey, you no longer have to, you know, sniff the tomatoes or knock the melons. We're all going to still do that. But there's some, you know, somewhere in between having to send an individual item off to a lab and have it analyzed. So we're trying to come up with a practical solution, I guess. And I think that's the biggest challenge, is just, you know, meeting somewhere in the middle, like with a lot of problems.
Yeah. So in the interface with your product and what you're doing, you're supplying the data and the information to these different points along the chain, whether it's retailer where you're starting now or later, as we talked about, the information just is out there for consumers. So do you see yourself as the kind of data information provider that goes into different platforms, or kind of how do you engage?
Yeah, that's right. So, and we were very careful about calling it nutritional intelligence because that's kind of how we see it, you know, and years ago I was in the military, and it's kind of how the military uses intelligence. It's information that's constantly updated, and that information's passed to the people that need it. And they're then armed with, you know, better decision-making. And so we don't want to be the party that says, hey, you should be eating this apple instead of that apple, or don't eat apples or whatever. We don't ever want to have an opinion. We want to provide the information so that a business and or a consumer can make better decisions. And so there's two parts to nutritional intelligence today. The first part is our teams on a daily basis throughout the US and in the UK right now go out and they just buy lots of different fruits and vegetables at all the top retailers and some other places too, but primarily retail right now. And they bring those back to a central location, primarily home right now. And then they analyze those fruits and vegetables. And then we aggregate that data on a daily basis. So we do tens of thousands every month. The other half of nutritional intelligence is our customers do the same thing. So we'll send them an instrument, we'll train them for a few minutes. They'll use those instruments and, hey, maybe one customer is looking at blueberries or another customer is looking at avocados or another customer is looking at all fresh foods or whatever. And so we aggregate that data too. And so then we, hey, if you know Kroger is doing that, we're not going to share it and say, hey, here's Kroger's data, but we'll aggregate it to say, hey, in general, we've gotten now all this information on avocados this month, and here's some trends that we're seeing. Oh. So that's how we develop this intelligence on a sort of a real-time basis, I guess.
Wow, that's great. Well, is there any other additional information that you wanted to bring up about the company or about the work that you're doing before we close?
No, I think we're just, again, we're excited to be sort of in the mix of those that are really trying to work on solutions for individual humans, you know, to improve health. And also on the other end of the spectrum where they're trying to figure out the best ways to optimize nutrients. So it's not, you know, it's complicated. And I think both of those organizations and both of those industries have a lot of work cut out for them because it is so messy and complicated. So we're excited to be in the middle and just provide information. And we hope we can benefit from what they're doing and also they benefit from what we're doing. And I think to that point, I think the thing to mention, which, you know, you and I have talked about before, is I think one of the greatest challenges in the food system, which is really frustrating, is that it's so fragmented that it's really impossible to work well with others. And so, you know, how a food is grown, how it's shipped, how it's sold, and how it's consumed are all completely interrelated with one another. And yet those are all completely separate industries. They have different, you know, priorities, they have different horizons, they have different, you know, investors and businesses and supply chains. And it's really difficult to span all those worlds on a, you know, a regular basis to find the synergies and the, you know, the unity that is needed in order to create those solutions. So I think what you're doing in terms of connecting all of us just in this, you know, small little example is great, because I think too few people and organizations are looking at it from a system standpoint. Mm-hmm. And if we don't look at it from a system standpoint, we're never going to solve, you know, systemic problems.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Greg. It was great to talk to you.
Yeah, you as well. Thank you so much for having me on.
So I'm not going to know exactly what's best for me to eat today, based uniquely on my genetics, my environmental situation, and the food itself. But as an N of one, I'm always testing and thinking about what makes me feel best and perform better, and that is eating more produce. All of these fields give us helpful information on how to eat better for our health. It just isn't all tied together in one app yet. In closing, I wanted to mention one more thing about this episode, and that is the variety of different types of journeys and careers that are open around food and ag. Sarah's role as data scientist driving the development of predictive models for human health that utilize genetics, lifestyle, and environment is fabulous. The more bright minds like Sarah that enter into food, health, and nutrition, the better off we all are. That's it for this episode of PMA Takes on Tech. Thanks for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. Be sure to check out all our episodes at PMA.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe, and I would love to get any comments or suggestions of what you might want me to take on. For now, stay safe, eat your fruits and vegetables, and we will see you next time.